It's called the Black Man is God. It's called the Black Man is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. The easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me? You really do? Anybody on your watch? Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet, a prophet.
The goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreamed from karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the text. Nah, I was legend. Rest in peace, Pop's a legend.
Yo, 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 yo. 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 What up? Jay Hicks, Hip Hop Sports Support Podcast. If you can't tell, I'm in a good mood today. I'm feeling very gregarious today. Yeah. Why do I feel good today? Why do I feel so good that I have to break out the big words today? Tom Brady won his sixth Super Bowl this week. Yes. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And tell the truth, you didn't think he was going to do it.
Woo!
You didn't think he was going to pull it off. You thought he was going to lose to Kansas City, didn't you? Didn't you? Tell the truth, y'all. I mean, just go ahead and be honest with yourself. Get it off your chest. You'll feel better about it. You counted him out. You said he wasn't going to do it. You said he wasn't going to beat the... A lot of y'all said he wasn't going to beat the Chargers. Then you said he wasn't going to beat Kansas City. Well, he can't beat Showtime Mahomes. Not Showtime. Can't beat Showtime Mahomes. In his own building? No, not with that offense. No Josh Gordon. Gronk running around like the Tin Man? No. It's not going to happen. Yeah, he did. And then what? And then what? Another Super Bowl, his ninth Super Bowl. Nine Super Bowls, y'all. Nine. The Patriots have been to nine Super Bowls in 18 years, man. It is insane. It's insane. Even if you don't like the Patriots, you should respect it. And even if you're still on that cheating BS, you're a dope, and I have no sympathy for you. You need to get some help. Jay Hicks, Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast, y'all. Today is February the 6th, 2019. I just wanted to holler at y'all right quick. Wanted to touch on a few things this evening. Obviously, we're on the eve of the trade deadline. This is a Wednesday night. I got the trade deadline special popping right in front of my face right now on television. It's on mute, so y'all don't hear it, but I'm looking at it right now on NBA TV. So if any deals go down, if you want to hear about the deals that are going down, you can hear them retroactively 2 days later on this podcast. You know where to go for that two-day-old news. You know what I'm saying? We're the spot. Preseason podcast of the year. You know? Shout out to everybody that continues to listen and support the site and the show. You know, we've been doing this for a long time, as we've mentioned, and we're still happy to keep bringing it to you. And matter of fact, we have a friend of the podcast, Anthony Houston, is going to be joining us a little bit later on in the show. Going to talk a little bit of Super Bowl, a little bit of NBA trade deadline stuff. But, you know, his Knicks are in peril right now. Let him tell it with the dealing of Kristaps Porzingis to the Dallas Mavericks last week, kind of out of nowhere, out of left field, the Knicks doing Knick things. And trading away their best player since Patrick Ewing for salary cap relief. That's what happened. Although, strangely, I don't think it was such a bad move. But we'll get into that a little bit later on. Yeah, Super Bowl is where we're going to start off tonight. And like I said, I'm going to do a little Super Bowl stuff. And then we'll bring on Anthony to do a little Super Bowl and a little trade deadline talk, chatter, as it were. Sorry if that popped in y'all ears. Be sure to continue to support the site, hiphopsportsupport.com, and follow the podcast. We're on iTunes, we're on Stitcher Radio, we're on Google Play, we're on SoundCloud, you know, we're where it's at, y'all. And we've had our playoff preview articles out there at each phase of the playoffs, starting with the wild card round, then a divisional round, moving to the conference championships, and of course the Super Bowl. We did a podcast or article for each round. We made predictions for all of them. We're going to go back over those predictions a little bit later on as well. And hiphopsportsupport.com, twitter.com/HHS report, facebook.com/HHS report. Yeah, man, got to start with Super Bowl 53. Call it the Brady Six. You know, that used to be symbolic for the six quarterbacks that were taken ahead of Tom Brady. Now it's symbolic for the six Super Bowl championship that Tom Brady possesses. The only player in the 100-year history of the National Football League to own 6 Super Bowls. So I guess technically 53 years, because the Super Bowl's only been around for 53 years. So let's be real about it, right? We don't count those old NFL championships for some reason, but the NFL League has been around for that long, but we only care about the Super Bowls, which started in the late 60s. I'm not quite sure why that is, but in the 53 years of the Super Bowl era, one player has 6 Super Bowl championships. His name is Thomas Brady. Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr. Now, I know what you're thinking. Jay, Brady was garbage in the Super Bowl. Like, he didn't do jack. He didn't do nothing. He was shitty. Check it out, man. Listen, I got to give credit to Bill Belichick, first and foremost, because I trash him all the time. Not because I don't think he's great. I actually think Bill Belichick is the best coach of his generation. But I don't think that he is quite as good as people make him out to be. Why is that? Well, if you look at his defense over the years, there's been many a year where they have been less than stellar, to say the least. But he gets credited as if his defense is stellar every year, and that's just not been the case. Now, they have a good scoring defense most years. They're at least in the, you know, between 5 and 10, or, you know, in the top half of the league, the Patriots are in scoring defense. But they've always had this bend don't break thing going, and they do a lot of damn bending. Let me just put it that way. They do a lot of bending. They bend it like Beckham. But even still, they find ways to win in spite of that, because they have the greatest quarterback that ever lived running their offense, right? But Bill Belichick came through for the Patriots in a major way. Him and Brian Flores, the new coach of the Dolphins, he was doing all the defensive signal calling in that Super Bowl 53 matchup against the Rams. You know, they came through in a major, major way. They held the Rams to 3 points. I believe it was the lowest scoring output by a team in the Super Bowl ever, or I believe, or close to it. The Rams were averaging just a little under 33 points a game during the season. They got held roughly 30 points under their average. It's amazing. But the Rams did their fair share of, you know, shooting themselves in the foot. They were their own worst enemy when it came to scoring points. And not only was Jared Goff less than stellar himself, but what we saw with Sean McVay and Todd Gurley was really, really bizarre stuff. But I'm going to come back to the Rams in a second. The Patriots, just trying to put in perspective what they've accomplished. I mean, it's the greatest sports dynasty I've ever witnessed in all my years watching sports. And we're coming up on about 3 decades of intense fandom of NFL football, NBA basketball, Major League Baseball, in all those, even college, like outside of Mount Union in Ohio, I don't think we've seen a dynasty quite like this, where a team in a salary cap era just continuing to change out guys at every position except one, and they just continue to find a way, reinvent themselves, change on the fly, change with the times. Not only do they change with the times, but they're often the innovators of the league. They're staying one step ahead of the competition, despite the fact that everybody's chasing them. It's just truly remarkable what they've pulled off. Belichick gets a ton of credit for that. As I've said before, you know, I'm not a Belichick guy because I'm from Cleveland. I saw him up close when I came into my own as a football fan. Bill Belichick was coaching the Cleveland Browns. He was coaching the team that I grew up watching. The Browns were nothing special under Belichick. They went to the playoffs once in 5 years. They may have had a good thing on the rise there, but then the team got moved and then he got fired. But even in the 4 years prior to that year when the move was announced, he only made the playoffs once in 4 years. Won one playoff game, lost the other one, and he was nothing special. But when it comes to Brady Belichick, who gets most of the credit? You know, I've had so many people over the years try to convince me that Bill Belichick deserves more credit than Brady, and he absolutely deserves more credit than Brady for Sunday's performance. No argument there. But overall, this is a man in Bill Belichick, and this is the only stat that I need to prove it. In games, as a head coach, in his career, where Tom Brady is not his starting quarterback, Bill Belichick is sub .500. That's it. That's all you need to know about who gets the most of the credit. And again, it's not a small sample. How many times I got to come on this podcast and say it? It's a large sample. We're talking like 6 years of evidence, 6 full seasons, like 5 in Cleveland, 1. Well, he had 5 in Cleveland, 4 or 5, 1 in New England. Then he had the season Brady got hurt. So he had almost that full season except for one game. And then he had the four Deflategate games. So when you add it all up, we're talking over 6 years. Now, if your favorite football team hired a coach and you gave him 6 years as head coach and all he gave you was 7 wins a season and one playoff win, would you be looking to bring him back in year 7? I don't think you would, right? But that's essentially what Belichick has been in his career without Tom Brady. Now, does Belichick get credit for making Brady what he is? Absolutely. Does Belichick get credit for creating the New England system that Brady is just a product of? Absolutely not. Bill Belichick is a defensive coach. He cut his teeth as a special teams coach. Then he was a defensive coach with the Giants, a defensive coordinator, a great one, mind you, but a defensive coordinator. And then he comes in, and then he gets all the credit for all the success that Brady's had on offense. And I don't buy that. Belichick couldn't find a quarterback in Cleveland. He cut Bernie Kosar. He couldn't make Drew Bledsoe work when he first got to New England. And Bledsoe was a quarterback who took a team to the Super Bowl with Bill Parcells in 1996. But with Belichick, it wasn't working. Brady comes along, climbs his way up the depth chart, gets his opportunity, and makes the most of it, just like we saw him do in college. He did the same thing in the NFL. So, no, he doesn't get more credit than Brady. He doesn't get credit for creating the system. You know, even though this is something that Brady had, Brady's not the product of the system. Brady is the system. Let's just call it what it is. Okay, the system didn't exist before Tom Brady. Now Tom Brady comes along, he dominates, and then they want to give Belichick the credit for it. Belichick has done well with the defense, but there's been a lot of years, like, I don't know, last year, for instance, when they gave up 41 points to Nick Foles, the backup quarterback. I think back to the 2012 team Patriots that went to the Super Bowl in Indianapolis and lost to the Giants the second time. That pass defense was the worst pass defense in NFL history, statistically, and I'm not kidding. Like, they gave up more passing yards than any team, I believe, in NFL history up to that moment. Now, y'all can look it up. I promise you, they were near the top of as in terms of the worst defenses, pass defenses ever. Which explains why Eli Manning went down the field on him in crunch time and the Giants scored a go-ahead touchdown with under a minute to go. Be that as it may, Sunday was Belichick's finest performance, I thought. It was better than his performance against the Rams in 2002, actually. I mean, the 2002 game was great, and it was completely unexpected. They were a huge underdog, the Patriots were, and you know, they shut down the Rams for the majority of the game up until the fourth quarter, and Ricky Prohl and them finally started to get loose. But then that man, number 12, came back and saved the day for New England once again, driving the team down against John Madden's wishes. On the telecast, he still went down and led the team in position to kick the game-winning field goal at the buzzer. Brady has 6 rings in all 6 Super Bowls. He's led a go-ahead touchdown drive in all of them. Now, you probably heard that this week, but you know what? You can't understate it. You can't understate it. In fact, as I go to my notes here, Tom Brady in the playoffs has now led 10 drives in the fourth quarter or overtime. Excuse me, in the Super Bowl, Brady has led 10 drives in the fourth quarter or overtime of the Super Bowl to tie the game or take the lead. That means in 9 games in the Super Bowl, he's led 10 drives in the fourth quarter or overtime to tie the game or take the lead. That's insane. Nobody else in NFL history has more than 3. He has 10. What does that tell you? Well, it tells you that good defenses typically make it to the Super Bowl more often than not. And if they don't, and if it's not a good defense, it's a good offense. And the good offenses put pressure on the other team's offense, or in this case, the Patriots' offense, because they know they have to score more points because their defense is going to be out there sucking wind trying to slow down the other team's great offense, right? And in spite of that, the Patriots, led by Brady, are still scoring against the toughest competition when the stakes are the highest. They don't get higher than the Super Bowl. They don't. It doesn't get higher than the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl in a one-score game. That's as clutch can get. And Brady's come through 10 times. 10 times. I mean, it's incredible. When you look back at the game itself, Brady was far from great. He threw a horrendous pass on his first pass of the game. He was missing receivers. That whole first half, I text the fam. I'm like, yo, Brady needs to burn his game tape from the first half. He just set it on fire because it was terrible. It was garbage. But then I got a great text from friend of the podcast, cousin Vince Hicks, my cousin Vinny. And he said, all right, it's the fourth quarter. I'm going to need the GOAT to be the GOAT. And I text back, he will. And then what happened after that? Boom, 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 right down the field. In fact, it was like within three minutes of real time, four consecutive plays, three of them were the same play. They had the little kind of Gronk where he faked the block and then he kind of went around the outside, around the defensive end, the edge rusher, and caught an 18-yard pass. And then the Patriots ran the same play or variations of the same play three times in a row. He hit Edelman on an option route in the middle of the field, Burkhead on a curl on the sideline, and then the big ball to Gronk up the seam, which he dropped in triple coverage. It dropped out of the heavens, y'all. Did y'all see that? Did you see Tom Brady drop that ball out of the heavens in triple coverage with the Super Bowl hanging in the balance in the fourth quarter? Did you see that? It was one of the best passes he's ever made in his career. Like, when you look at his career highlight, when they always like to say, oh, Aaron Rodgers can make throws that Tom Brady only dreams he could make. It's like, well, there may be some truth to that. But guess what? I don't know that Aaron Rodgers is dropping it into triple coverage in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl in a tie game. I'm just saying. But we saw it from the GOAT. When it mattered most, he came through again. This is what he does. This is why I come on the podcast every year and I tell y'all not to bet against the Pats. I tell y'all, don't bet against number 12 in New England. I get tired of picking the Patriots every year because it doesn't make me look smart or creative. But damn it if I'm not right. I mean, what do you want? This is what they do. This is what they do. We talked about on the website in our Super Bowl preview that we could kind of reduce this thing down to whether or not the Rams are going to get pressure on Brady, and I didn't want to do it that way. You know, that was kind of a common take. You know, and I was like, do I want to just go with that? But, I mean, like, that's kind of what you felt like after the first two games of the playoffs for New England, where the Chargers and Chiefs didn't get a hand on them once. And, like, literally, they didn't sack them at all. And so then it's like, okay, well, if the Rams are going to have any shot, they're going to have to dirty up Brady a little bit. You can beat the Patriots if you get Brady on the ground, but it's no guarantee that you're going to beat them if you do that. But if you don't get Brady on the ground, you have no chance. You have no chance. The Rams, for all the hoopla around their defensive line, mostly deserved, and Aaron Donald's amazing, but for all that, Brady was under pressure on only 14% of his dropbacks, and he was sacked just one time in the game. That's all you need to know, really, about the game. Like, even if you didn't watch it, if I told you that, you probably would have figured it. Brady would have figured it out eventually. And then, again, the game-winning drive, it was the same thing. Nobody got a hand on him. Brady went 4-for-4 for 67 yards. And even though Brady stunk for the majority of the Super Bowl on Sunday, to me, it just kind of cancels out the Super Bowl from last year where he was transcendent but lost the game. Brady threw for a playoff record 505 yards last year against Philly, and they lost the game. And so what happened? You heard everybody get on TV, or, you know, not everybody, but all the haters got on TV, got on Twitter, got on something, and clown Brady for losing the game. Oh, he lost to the backup quarterback. You know, even though he put up 33 points and a Super Bowl record for passing yards and three touchdowns and no picks, they still criticized Brady because he lost the game. So if that was your position a year ago, you ain't got nothing to say today. Because although Brady didn't look good, he won the game. And he came through when it mattered. So I don't want to hear it. You know what I mean? And anybody that you hear that's trying to discredit Brady for that, they're a moron. You ain't got to listen to them. They're dopes. If you go back to what Brady's playoff record is as a quarterback, he's 30-10. 30-10. He's won more playoff games than any other quarterback in the NFL history has ever started. And he's won 75% of those playoff games, which is why I always contended he was the greatest, because there was never any drop-off in his ability to lead his team to wins. There was not a drop-off from the regular season because he wins about 75% of his regular season games. You move to the playoffs where the competition is harder, the defense is harder, the weather is colder, the stakes are higher, the pressure is greater. And he still wins 75% of his games. There's literally no drop-off. Literally none. And for anybody who tries to sit here and tell you that Brady's lucky, like I heard that dope Rob Parker say on TV, I don't understand why Fox hires guys to say incorrect shit. They can hire me for that. I mean, I could just get on TV and say anything. Like, how come that guy gets a check and I don't? I'm not trying to hate on that guy, really, as a from a black man perspective. You know, go get and do what you do. But just from a sports fan perspective, that guy's a moron. And either that or he's just simply just pushing an agenda and he's just trying to get people to watch what he's doing. But he's just saying stupid stuff, like taking shots at Brady for no reason, calling Brady the luckiest quarterback ever. If he's the luckiest quarterback ever because of the Super Bowl, how do you explain him being lucky in the regular season where he's the winningest player at quarterback of all time? He's the winningest regular season quarterback of all time. He's the winningest playoff quarterback of all time. And he's the winningest Super Bowl quarterback of all time. That's not luck, man. He's got over 200 career wins. That's not luck. 237, I believe, to be exact. You throw in the 13 playoff buys, those first-round buys that he earns every single season in the playoffs, you throw those in, because that's basically an instance where he's gotten his team to advance to the next round. That puts his record at 43-10. That's an 81% clip in the playoffs. 43-10. This guy's off the charts, man. This guy's off the charts. And now the new debate is whether or not he's better than Michael Jordan. I'm going to get to that in a little bit. But just getting back to the game, though. You know, I will say this, though. If we have to give, and you know, Julian Edelman got the MVP of the Super Bowl. I was cool with that. It was either him or Stephon Gilmore, I thought, probably deserved it. Ironically, because of what Brady did do on that drive in the fourth quarter, he dropped it into Gronk, and Gronk fell at the two-yard line. If Gronk had just so happened to have fallen into the end zone, and he was, you know, 6 feet further up the field, and that just happened to be a touchdown pass instead of a pass to the two-yard line, Brady probably gets MVP. I don't know if he should have or not in that scenario, but he probably would have because he would have had a touchdown. And then anybody today that's saying, oh, Brady didn't even throw a touchdown, it's kind of like, well, Gronk just happened to land at the two-yard line. I mean, come on. But if I had to say who should have been the MVP of the playoffs, it isn't Tom Brady. It isn't Julian Edelman. It isn't Rob Gronkowski. It isn't anybody on the defense. The MVP of the whole entire NFL playoffs was Sony Michel. That's right, Sony Michel, the rookie out of Georgia, tailback, who kind of underwhelmed throughout the course of the season. In the playoffs, three games, 336 yards rushing. That's 112 yards a game. Six touchdowns. He ran for 4.7 yards per carry and three victories. I would say Sony Michel was the MVP of the playoffs. He scored in the fourth quarter late of the AFC Championship game. He scored three touchdowns in the first half against San Diego, and he scored the only touchdown in the Super Bowl. Sony Michel's the MVP of the playoffs, so shout out to Sony, man, because ain't nobody really talking about him today, but he deserved that. On the flip side, the Rams running back situation. I don't know what the hell's going on in L.A., man. Okay? I don't know what Sean McVay's on right now. Everybody was kind of convinced that that dude is brilliant. But what he did in the Super Bowl was criminal. If what he and his players are saying is actually true. Sean McVay contends that Todd Gurley was healthy. Todd Gurley contends that Todd Gurley was healthy. Todd Gurley was the offensive player of the year in the NFL last year. He was the runner-up to MVP of the league last year. This year, Todd Gurley led the NFL in touchdowns despite sitting out the last two games of the season. He has been a workhorse back and the calling card of the Los Angeles Rams since McVay's gotten there has been Todd Gurley. Now, if Todd Gurley was hurt, that's one thing. We can excuse that. But his knee was still, you know, kind of banged up or whatever, I guess. You know, he injured it towards the end of the season. And, yeah, CJ Anderson came in and he did his thing. He did well when he got his opportunity off the street. He might have looked a little like Mike Tolbert back there, but that's okay. He was still putting in work and getting numbers. But we did see Todd Gurley run for over 100 yards and a score against the Dallas Cowboys in the divisional round. Then we go to the NFC Championship game and Gurley's invisible. 2 weeks pass and then the Super Bowl comes. And Gurley's invisible, essentially, again. He ran the ball 10 times for 35 yards, I think it was. Now, Gurley actually performed better than CJ Anderson did in the Super Bowl. But it shouldn't even come close to that. CJ Anderson got 7 carries. Why is CJ Anderson getting 70% of the work that Todd Gurley's getting? Why is Todd Gurley not catching any passes out of the backfield? What happened to all those nifty little screen passes and whatnot that Sean McVay has gotten so adept at running? Like, that's his hallmark. Those little screen passes to Gurley. Gurley takes him 70 yards for a touchdown. What happened to that? We didn't see any of that. So Sean McVay's got some explaining to do. And I think he did try to come out into the media and say, you know, well, it was a scheme thing and, you know, the way that the defense was playing and da da da. You know, I think there was a lot of that kind of talk. But I'm not buying it, man. I'm not. I mean, that's a reason. It's just a very, very poor reason. Because I don't know how you're so close that you can't see the forest through the trees to the point that Todd Gurley, your greatest offensive asset, touches the ball 10 times in the biggest game of all of y'all's lives. It just doesn't make any sense. Belichick got roasted for benching Malcolm Butler last year. This is way more egregious than that. I had a buddy ask me, you know, during the game, because I was saying it during the game, y'all. I was telling people, if there's really nothing wrong with Todd Gurley, then McVay should get destroyed if the Rams lose this game. And I don't know if he will. And then my buddy said, worse than Belichick with Malcolm Butler last year? And I said, yeah, it's about on that same level. No, this is way worse. Because Malcolm Butler wasn't no damn offensive player of the year or defensive player of the year or MVP candidate or nothing like that. Okay? Todd Gurley is one of the best players in football. Todd Gurley is the highest paid running back ever. Ever. In the NFL. Why you ain't giving him the ball, yo? Why not? Especially when your quarterback looks shook. Why you ain't giving Todd Gurley the ball? Like, it just... It defies description as to how big of a blunder that was by the Rams. It was reminiscent of Marshall Faulk in the first Patriots-Rams Super Bowl. Marshall Faulk couldn't get the football, and history then went ahead and repeated its damn self. Can you believe that? Unbelievable. McVay needs to have his feet held to the fire for that, but at any rate. Oh, and speaking of the NFC Championship game, I made a brief reference, passing reference to that. I apologize if y'all hear my daughter crying in the background. Or maybe that's my son. I don't know. We have a lot of whiny kids in this house. The New Orleans Saints got screwed royally in the NFC Championship game. I know it. You know it. We all know it. Saints fans and the whole city of New Orleans, shut the hell up with the complaining. Okay? Shut up. Y'all got robbed. Yes, you did. Move on. Life goes on. I'm sorry that y'all got robbed. But you know what? And I saw people that were, you know, riding for Drew Brees or riding for the Saints saying stuff like, man, if the Saints would have been in this game, they'd have beat both these teams, man. The Saints would have beat the Patriots. No, they wouldn't have. No, they wouldn't have. The Saints have more talent than the Patriots, sure. Just like the Rams, Chiefs, and Chargers had more talent than the Patriots. But based on what we saw from the Saints, where they slept walked through the divisional round game in the first half against the Eagles. And then they came out and couldn't cash in early on in the red zone against the Rams in the NFC Championship game. And then late in the game executed like garbage in the final 2 minutes of the NFC Championship game and in overtime. You telling me that same team who did all that stuff at home was going to go on a neutral field against Belichick and Brady and beat them? Hell no. Absolutely not. The best team won. And here's the scary part, y'all. The Patriots not even that good this year. They're not. They're really not. They have no weapons, really. They have Edelman and Gronk. And Gronk's not 100%. He just saved a little bit left in the gas tank for the Super Bowl run. Gronk ain't really got it going on like that anymore. And I love Gronk. Edelman's great. He's a slot receiver. They had nobody to throw to on the outsides. And the Rams took away James White. They weren't even throwing it to running backs out of the backfield. And they still got beat. I mean, seriously, Josh Gordon's gone. You know what I'm saying? Philip Dorsett and Chris Hogan went catchless in the Super Bowl. Didn't matter. So don't tell me that the Saints were going to sit here and beat the Patriots just because you didn't like the game that you're watching because you don't like the Patriots. Get out of here with that. But yeah, man, just real quick, just kind of wrapping things up. Belichick's great. He's still not the GOAT. By the way, for the record, the greatest football coach of all time is Paul Brown. And if you think I'm wrong, do some damn research on Paul Brown. But it was the best coaching job from Belichick I think we've seen in a long time. A lot of people are giving the defense a little too much credit, though. I think people are using this game as rationalization to say that Belichick is more responsible for the Patriots' success than Brady, and that's just wildly inaccurate. If for no other reason that as great as Belichick was in these playoffs and his defense was in these playoffs, they got a lot of help from Brady in that offense. For example, the Kansas City game, keeping Kansas City's offense on the sideline the entire first half because Brady and them kept picking up third down after third down. The time of possession in the first half of the AFC Championship game was 21 minutes for the Patriots and under 9 minutes for the Chiefs. So, yeah, Belichick's defense is great. Only when Kansas City had less than 9 minutes to have the ball in a half. But they still scored 24 points on New England in the fourth quarter alone in 3 minutes of game time. How do you explain that? Was that so great from Belichick? I don't think it was. And we saw the same thing in the first half of the Super Bowl. Patriots had the ball for 19 minutes and 52 seconds. The Rams had it for 10:08 in the first half. Same thing. So yeah, he gets credit, but you got to get that offense a little bit of credit too. But again, I already rattled off the most significant stat as to why Belichick is not more responsible than Brady for the success, but he's absolutely critical to it. And Bill Belichick is the best coach of his generation. All the credit in the world to him and Brady and the Patriots organization, Robert Kraft, all of them. If you're trying to discredit New England because Brady had a MAGA hat in his locker 4 years ago, you're corny, okay? Because you never heard a black teammate in 20 years speak a negative word about Tom Brady, okay? So I don't think he's as hardcore about all the stuff that Donald Trump supports just because he had the hat in his locker because he was trying to support his friend at the time. You know, the MAGA hat 4 years ago don't even really mean what it means now, or 3.5 years ago. The MAGA hat Trump was on some crazy stuff 3.5 years ago, but that hat has taken on a whole different meaning in the years since he's become president. And we've seen that through his actions and through his policy. You know, it's not the same, but you don't see that hat these days. That was back then. But Robert Kraft is also dancing with Meek Mill just as much as he hobnobs with Donald Trump, or he's dancing with Cardi B and he's hanging out with Meek Mill and the Migos and all that stuff. Like, people kind of pick and choose how they want to twist the political affiliations into as a rationale as to why they don't like somebody, and that's corny to me. Last thing I'll say about just Brady in the game and all that stuff, going back a minute ago, I mentioned that there's this Brady-Jordan debate that you're seeing everywhere. Yeah, man, I think Tom Brady's more impressive than Michael Jordan. I do. I lived through Michael Jordan. I saw Michael Jordan. I witnessed his prime years. A lot of y'all not even old enough to remember Michael Jordan. I watched Michael Jordan. He was amazing. But Michael Jordan wasn't winning as a rookie. He didn't lead a team to a championship as a rookie. Brady was a redshirt freshman, won the Super Bowl. Brady's 41 years old, won the Super Bowl. Okay? And he won Super Bowls in the middle, too. And he went to Super Bowls in the middle. And he had a perfect season. And he had the first ever 50-touchdown season. And he's got every playoff record known to man. And he's won more rings than anybody else in NFL history. And these are things that Michael Jordan, comparatively speaking, did not do. And Jordan was great, but, I mean, if you're asking me to say who had a more impressive career or who's the better team sport athlete, even though it's an apples and oranges kind of comparison, I get that. Brady would get my vote, especially for doing it in a league that's designed to make it more difficult to stay on top. I think you can argue that it's harder to get on top in the NBA. Unquestionably, it's harder to stay on top in the NFL. And the Patriots have managed to do it. Real quick, y'all, some other football things that I noticed. Football things. The same old football prevailed. Now, we incorrectly picked the Bears to come out of the NFC. But we said, why do we run away from defense every year? Like, every year we fall in love with, people fall in love with offense in September. And then in the playoffs, they act shocked when the defensive-minded team wins. The Patriots had the best defense in the playoffs. That's why they won the Super Bowl. Okay? And that and Brady coming through in the crunch time. That was the formula for success. And it worked. And it worked again. So, you know, defense, running the ball. All of a sudden, Sony Michel, like I said, he was playoff MVP. Todd Gurley was a huge storyline. The defenses were a huge storyline. We saw a defensive-minded Super Bowl. It was a low-scoring Super Bowl. As much as people want to change football into this 7-on-7 drill, pass friendly, pass happy thing, no defense, none of that stuff. Nah, the same core stuff that we know about football all came true once again. All of it. The running, the defense, the low scoring, the physicality, winning on the line of scrimmage, good defense, like all that stuff that we see every single year that people want to forget about in September and October, we saw it again in this postseason. That stuff's not whack. That stuff's not going away. As far as picks, I finished the playoffs. I was 2-2 wild card weekend in terms of picks. I was 2-2 in the divisional round in terms of picks. I was 1-1 in the conference championship game, and I was 1-0 in the Super Bowl. So there you have it. So finishing a shade over 500, but all time, y'all, on the history of the website, your boy is 50-27 picking NFL playoff games straight up. I should move to Vegas. 50-27 all time on the history of the site. It's not the preseason podcast of the year for nothing, y'all. Y'all better get with it. Just a few other things. We noticed that Saquon Barkley took home Rookie of the Year, as he should have, over Baker Mayfield. And as a Browns fan, I'm happy to see that, because maybe that'll piss off Baker even more going into next year. But yeah, Saquon deserved that over Baker. You're fooling yourself if you think otherwise. Saquon was the better player, period. And then going back to just the picks in the playoffs, it was funny because I did have the Bears coming out the NFC. And a lot of people thought that the Saints should have been in the Super Bowl because of that no-call pass interference. But the Saints should have lost the previous week to the Eagles. But it wasn't for that drop pass by Alshon Jeffrey. I think the Eagles win that game. But then the Eagles, they really should have lost to the Bears the week before. But they were missing their all-pro safety. And they had a kick hit off the upright and the crossbar that prevented the Bears from advancing. So, you know, I was wrong in that I picked the Bears. But I was right in that, A, I picked the Patriots. And, B, the fact that I was saying that defense was the way to go. I mean, and all those teams, you know, they should have lost. They kind of win a week longer than they should have. And I think if you replay the playoffs 10 times, I think the Bears probably have a little more success more often than not. A couple other housekeeping notes. We said both number one seeds were going to lose at home. I did say that, but I had them in the wrong week. At least I had Kansas City initially in the wrong week. I had them losing to the Colts. And the Saints, I had them losing to the Eagles, but they advanced, then they turned around and lost to the Rams, so I just couldn't get the Saints right, you know what I mean? But kind of figured both of those one seeds were kind of doomed at some point, just picking the wrong week. I gotta say, I was grossly inaccurate on my preseason Super Bowl pick. That was the Chargers and the Vikings. Yeah, that didn't go so well. But I did have the Chiefs, though. I nailed Kansas City in that. I told you guys, they don't get enough stops to win a Super Bowl. And again, going back to what I said a minute ago, defense still matters. You can't make it not matter. You can try to legislate it out the game. You can try to do whatever you want to do. It still matters. Defense and getting stops when it counts in the playoffs still matters. Kansas City couldn't do it all year. Kansas City played so many good teams this year, and they could never get a stop when it counted. They could never get a stop when it counted. So why were we to believe that they'd be able to change in the playoffs? And they couldn't. They couldn't get a stop against the Patriots. Tom Brady led 2 go-ahead fourth-quarter touchdown drives, and then he did it again in overtime. So that was 3 drives when the Chiefs needed to get a stop to win the game, and they couldn't do it. That's why I don't got no sympathy for anybody, Chiefs fans or supporters or players, that are bitching about the overtime rules. You know when they didn't complain about the overtime rules? After the NFC Championship game. That's right, when the Saints got the ball first and threw a pick. You know what I mean? The Rams didn't win the coin toss, but their defense went out and they made a play, and then their offense made a couple throws, and they kicked the long field goal, and the game was over. They had their chances. Just like New Orleans did, Kansas City had their chances too. Before that, don't go scoreless in the first half if you want to go to the Super Bowl. How about that? The overtime rules are exactly perfect the way they are. I hope they never change them. And so with that, we're going to take a little hiatus. We're going to take a little break through the magic of podcasting. We're going to come back at y'all tomorrow on February 7th. We're going to have Anthony Houston to talk a little Super Bowl recap quickly and get into a whole bunch of trade deadline stuff, because the NBA trade deadline will have come and gone by that point. And with that, we're going to go ahead and welcome Anthony Houston back to the preseason podcast of the year. How you doing, Anthony?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. You know, I just spent like 40-something minutes rambling about the Super Bowl. And here we are. I just wanted to get your thoughts on the game. Did you have any particular takeaways from the game or the NFL season at large? Anything that you care to share with our audience?
The Super Bowl was I thought it was not a great game, but definitely not as bad as people thought it or made it out to be. I kind of enjoyed it for what it was. I think it kind of proves that maybe you shouldn't spend money on quarterbacks anymore. That's my biggest takeaway from this whole NFL season.
Well, you wrote about that on the site earlier in the year. And I think people kind of caught on to it later. Like, not everybody. I mean, there are some pockets of the internet, of course, that already... I mean, here's the thing. You were one of the first people I knew that was in on the whole concept of not spending top dollar on a quarterback necessarily. You took it a step further on your piece on Hip Hop Sports Report that basically said, you know what, we need to start seeing more teams readily cut bait with the guy who was supposed to be the franchise quarterback.
I love to call myself a trendsetter the few times I can, but it's just the fact of the matter is that right now, if you can say you want a quarterback, that's free money. And like any good problem in America, if you can just keep throwing money at it, eventually it's going to get fixed. Quarterbacks are the same way, in my opinion.
So, like, if you were the Cowboys, you would not be looking to ink Dak Prescott to a large extension, correct?
Absolutely, 100%. I would throw another quarterback at that quarterback problem and let it get figured out eventually.
So what was it about the Super Bowl in particular that drew you back to that conclusion?
Jared Goff is out there, and he was completely unprepared for the defense, but he got them to the Super Bowl. Maybe a little bit more preparation, or if he wasn't facing Bill Belichick, maybe they win a Super Bowl and they're spending cents on the dollar for their quarterback position.
I mean, I like Goff. I mean, he's a guy that I think as of right now, if his contract were up this year, you know, I would be willing, if I ran the Rams, I'd be willing to spend a pretty decent amount of money on retaining his services. You don't think you would do that, though?
I'm not sold on it, and I'm not sold that what you're seeing out of Jared Goff couldn't be replicated to a decent degree with another quarterback. I mean, look what's going on in Philadelphia. They have their guy who keeps getting hurt, and they have just some other guy who comes in there and gets them basically to the playoffs. They win a Super Bowl with Nick Foles. I mean, that's kind of the proof is in the pudding right there.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess there's some truth to that. But in any event, you know, I spent the majority of the 40 minutes just gushing over the Patriots and Tom Brady because that's what's been come to expected by this podcast. You know, it's just funny because the reason why I ride so hard for Brady is because I've had to deal with so many people telling me I was wrong for so many years. And, you know, I just fail to see how anybody could really find fault with pretty much anything that dude does on the football field.
He's not good at catching the ball. I'll throw that out there.
No, he's not a great wide receiver. There are better receivers in football than Tom Brady. This is fact.
Poor blocking out of that Tom Brady.
Yeah, right? Right? Yeah. People were really, like, getting on him about dropping that pass in the Super Bowl last year. Like they relished in like shit talking about that, like, ah, man, he dropped the pass, he would have scored. It's like, no, he wouldn't. He would have gotten tackled like 10 yards later. But like, we all know how that guy runs. But yeah, man, anyways, NFL season is over with. It's sad now. Any final thoughts on the NFL season about your Packers, about the Patriots, or anything else?
Just that one other thing, occasionally we do talk about the Patriots and the NFL in general, and one of the things that is, and I've mentioned this before to you, that I'm not sure where the institution of New England Patriot football begins and ends around Tom Brady, but comparing the Packers to the Patriots, I mean, they're probably the longest successful franchises in each conference, maybe Seattle probably more than Green Bay as of late. But the I guess the best compliment I could tell to the Patriots is that the Packers have been really good because they've had Aaron Rodgers at his best for 10 years now, and that has no longer been good enough. But there's been no innovation on the part of Aaron Rodgers, the part of Mike McCarthy, and you can't say that for the Patriots. You can say a lot of things about how horrible they are and how amoral they are about their roster construction, kind of like you touched on earlier, but they've always been innovative, and that's the kind of thing that keeps them being successful. Their identity has changed probably 6 times, and they've still been on top through all these various changes. They're kind of like the NFL version of Madonna that way. So, yeah, hats off to them for that aspect of it, which is kind of a little underrated, I think, a little bit, looking at them in totality. If they're really kind of done this time, if it's all kind of maybe petering out just due to age and injury and stuff like that.
I don't want to – I want to stop short of comparing the Patriots to Madonna because the Patriots are actually good. So
Madonna,
I'd prefer
– Madonna had her time when we were like 2 or 3 years old is my understanding.
Okay, but was she good though? Just because she had her time doesn't mean she was good.
She did numbers.
Just because she did numbers doesn't mean she was good. I mean, wasn't her whole shtick that, you know, I'm a whore and I'm proud of it? Wasn't that the whole deal? Like, does that mean you're good?
There are a lot of proud whores out there.
But that doesn't mean you're good.
I don't have enough stock in Madonna to argue on her behalf.
Nor should you.
The longevity, you know, pick anyone you want that's very, that has a lot of different identities. You know, that's kind of what the Patriots have been. The only thing constant has been Brady and Belichick, and I guess Kraft.
Yeah, but I would agree, though, and I've actually mentioned that in the first block of the podcast, just that they've been able to reinvent themselves, and, you know, they were a physical defensive team, smash mouth, you know, ball control type of team in the early years, and then it was they went to the more of a high-flying offense with Moss and Dante Stallworth and some speedsters and Welker underneath, and then they went to the double tight end thing, and they were the first team to really start doing that. And then they kind of went out. They went to the short white guy attack when they had, you know, Edelman and Danny Amendola, and then they brought in Austin Colley for a cup of coffee. Remember that? And now they're kind of, I don't know what they are now. They're kind of I guess they're back to being a running team, because I said on the first part that if you had to pick a MVP of the postseason, it would actually be Sony Michel, really. But yeah, man, it's remarkable stuff what they're doing. All right, that's enough football. I want to give you the floor to talk about your New York Knicks. Now, you texted me last week in a panic when your boy Kristaps Porzingis exited Manhattan and was heading due west towards Dallas. There's been a lot of speculation about the Knicks, and I know this is like a little late, you know, for podcasting purposes, but I wanted to specifically, as a diehard, lifelong Knicks fan, I wanted to get your take on this. There's been a lot of speculation about what it is that actually happened, whether or not Kristaps demanded a trade, whether or not he just suggested that he's unhappy with the direction of the franchise, which everybody's been unhappy with the direction of the franchise for 25 years. Like, I don't really know what happened there, but there's been some people believe that that's a bunch of hogwash and that he didn't demand a trade and that the Knicks are just peddling that those lies to make themselves sound better. What do you think? Where do you shake out on the entire Porzingis situation and whatever it is the Knicks are trying to do for the future, whether or not they have Durant in mind, whether or not they have an Anthony Davis deal in mind? And I know you have Zion Williamson in mind, but the floor is yours.
I'll just start off from, you know, that Porzingis trade, when it happened, it came completely out of left field and took me and all of Knicks fandom by surprise, the entire league by surprise, really. You know, I had a ton of stock in Porzingis. That was the guy who was, you know, going to make everything work from a cap perspective, building around him with, you know, free agent Knox players and things like that. He was the guy who was going to, you know, just be that core piece, that homegrown piece that we hadn't had since I was a kid. You know, the best guy we've had since Ewing, 100%. So, yeah, that was, I thought he was going to be around for the long haul. You know, the guy who was going to be my son's favorite player, right? So when that all came about, you know, I was hurt. But then like you said, the story started coming out, whether or not he was happy about this and that, and just a lot of it, too many stories that we kind of let slide back in the day because the Knicks have been terrible for so long over Kristaps's history with the Knicks, and it's only been two, three years. So there's been little stories here and there about his discontent with the team, his little attitude problems and stuff, and it's been okay because, you know, Bill is worse than him in this situation. James Dolan is worse than him in every situation. We don't know what the Steve Mills guy is doing. Scott Perry, we don't know those people. So, you know, there's a lot of pent up good, or not pent up, but like goodwill or just belief in Porzingis that we had. And, you know, there's very few people in the NBA who have their family relative as an agent where it's deemed good business decisions. And there's just some things that he's done and things that have come out. You know, he's got this whole injury thing, and the Knicks are finally doing everything the quote-unquote right way, and it seems odd that he is now, you know, wanting to post things like the people, the fans should stay woke about the Knicks and this and that. So I'm believing that the Knicks spin a little bit about stuff that's going on just because it seems par for the course with what we've seen from him. Whether or not he demanded a trade, you know, you can demand a trade. I've never been one to say that players can demand a trade and actually get it. The teams have to trade them. But I think that, you know, the marriage probably had run its course. It's unfortunate. There probably were mistakes made by the Knicks along the way. They could have tried to make things better, but they hired a new coach and sent him all the way across the world to see Porzingis in his hometown to, you know, do that. No one's trying to go to Latvia, especially not someone from California. They hired this new coach and put him in the first thing smoking across the world to see him. If that's not a commitment of, you know, reestablishing that relationship, I don't know what is. Porzingis couldn't play all season, and he's mad that they're losing. You know, if you want to feed your ego, your team losing when you're not there, that should be the biggest thing for you. But that wasn't good enough for him. He probably really wasn't happy about them not offering him that max deal, signing him when he got hurt. But shrewd business decision that they talked about publicly, which means they must have talked about it privately. The Knicks did too many normal things for too long about all the spin they're putting out. So it sucks it had to happen, but it did, and we're going to move on. I do think that the Knicks are going to sign Kevin Durant, and that's really going to make what it's all about. I think they're going to sign Kevin Durant, they're going to sign Kyrie, and they're going to end up with a tough choice to make of whether or not, maybe not that tough, but how many draft picks are going to offer for Anthony Davis and three top 15 players in the NBA right now to compete in this newly strong Eastern Conference going into next season. So that's kind of, if they pull off this big gamble, it's worth it. If not, they're just going to be bad and have young kids again, which isn't the worst thing ever. It's the same. They've been bad for 25 years. At least they'll have, you know, young kids to be bad with now as opposed to old vets. So that's kind of where I'm at with the whole Knicks drama.
So I got to say, that is a far cry from where you were when I last talked. Like, you were ready to drive your car into a tree the last time we were talking about Porzingis. And now it's all like, well, you know, we're going to get Durant. We're going to get Kyrie. You told me that you had resigned yourself to the fact that the Knicks were never going to be good again. Remember that?
It would not be good. It would be all the way Knicks live to have all this happen. Get Kyrie, get Durant, get Anthony Davis, and all of their various injury histories hit at the same time. That's still on the table. That's the very worst case scenario.
I suppose that is still on the table, but, you know, I don't know that you're going to get all those guys. You might get one or two. I don't even – the prevailing wisdom today has been that if Kevin Durant goes to the Knicks, he's going to get eaten alive by the media, and I would tend to agree. That dude is the most – mentally weak superstar athlete I can ever remember. And, you know, it's easy to make fun of him, but in fairness, you know, who's to say that I would not handle it poorly also? But he's handling this being famous and being like a superstar basketball player thing really badly these last few years, really. Like, I don't understand this dude. And if he's going to be bitching this much about, like, plausible, reasonable questions that he's been getting at press conferences after games when he hasn't spoken to the media for 10 days, what the hell is he going to do with the New York tabloids when they go on a two-game losing streak? I mean, do you see the problem here, Anthony? Like, they're not going to – it's not going to go well at all. If you know what I mean? Like, if he's the best player on the team in New York.
No, that could be a big problem for him. He may want to – there's a couple of different ways you can handle the New York media. It would be, you know, be exceptionally cool about everything, speaking platitudes a la Derek Jeter, just be great on the court. Speaking platitudes and be very – return be mellow about things the way Carmelo did when he was here in New York, or the other way that you can handle the media would be how Enes Kanter in his time here in New York has handled the media and always speak about toughness and this and that and just make a big show like it's pro wrestling. Those are your primary three ways you're going to deal with New York media in a way that they're going to handle you with, you know, kid gloves, so to speak. And Mello got the worst treatment of it, but you know, there's ways you can deal with it. And then,
dude, he's not going to do any of those things.
He's not going to do any of those things, but he's going to get more wins than Carmelo or Enes Kanter ever did.
Probably, but I just don't see it ending well if he goes to New York as the lead dog and he, you know, if it's him and Kemba Walker and, you know, RJ Barrett or something like that. Like, that's a decent team. Because Zion's going to the Cavs. We already know this. So, you know.
If there's any justice in any of the multiverse, the Cavaliers will not get another number one pick ever again.
Can I just...
at least for another 20 years.
I got to defend the Cavs on that, man. And I defend the Cavs a lot. Sue me, okay? I'm just saying, like... everybody says that. I get sick of, you know who says that a lot? Bill Simmons says that a lot. I love Bill Simmons, but he does stuff that irritates me. And every time he mentions the Cavs in the lottery, he always basically says the same thing that you just said. And he, you know, he's just like, oh, they've won it too many times. It's like, really, Bill, you're the guy who's the Boston sports fan talking about somebody else won something too many times and that they don't deserve it? As many freaking titles as the city of Boston has won in the last 20 years, like, you're one to talk. You know, I don't appreciate that. As many Celtics championships as there's been in the NBA, you know what I mean? Like, would you rather have championships or would you rather have the draft lottery go your way? Like, I'd rather have the rings. You know what I'm saying?
The Cavaliers have both.
The Cavaliers have one ring.
And
one.
There were draft titles.
Okay, but one of those was Anthony Bennett. That doesn't count. One of those...
No backsies.
You know, I'm glad we talked about the Cat because I got something I want to get off my chest. So, you know, one of my biggest pet peeves, and I've said this on the podcast, I've said it on the website, I've rambled on Facebook Live after when LeBron went to the Lakers. I went on Facebook Live and talked about this on the Hip Hop Sports Support Facebook page. The way that the Cavaliers front office is mischaracterized in the media drives me up the wall. And it's not that I think that the Cavs front office is perfect, because they are far from it. I'm not saying that they're perfect. I'm not here to argue that. But there's a prevailing wisdom in the NBA and through fans and media circles that the Cavaliers are just a group of bumbling idiots as a front office, and that they're just fortunate that LeBron was born up the street and that's the only reason they have any success. And I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that at all. You know, and this is kind of how I was thinking about it myself just recently. So, like, obviously... you know, they had LeBron for the first 7 years, and everybody always says, oh, 7 years, you know, they couldn't build a winner in 7 years. And it's like, well, that's not really true. They were a pretty damn good team when he left. But those first 2 years, Dan Gilbert didn't own the team. That was Gordon Gunn owning the team. So Dan Gilbert gets crap for 7 years of no success with LeBron when he only owned the team for five of those years. And then LeBron wasn't ready to take that step anyways the first 2 years. So then you look at the last 5 years that he was in Cleveland with the first stint, and, you know, some mistakes were made, but I've always been of the belief that LeBron was his own worst enemy in both of his stints in Cleveland when it came to bringing in talent from the outside. But one thing I will say is that when you look back at the last 10 years of basketball, Anthony, you know what I would argue is probably the best free agent signing in the last decade in basketball? It was LeBron James getting signed by the Cavaliers. I think that you could make a strong case that that was the best free agent acquisition. Now, you can make the case for Durant going to Golden State. You can make a case for LeBron going down to Miami. You know what I mean? I totally wholeheartedly agree with those, but just in terms of, like, the talent that it took by the front office to lure a player into there, like, because Cleveland didn't have any success before LeBron, right? That's what everybody loves to say. But yeah, and even with that checkered history that Dan Gilbert and LeBron had, they still managed to lure him back to Cleveland for 4 years, and they used it to go to 4 straight finals and win a title. I think that's a pretty damn good, you know, to pull off prime LeBron and to get him to come away from Miami to go up to the cold in Cleveland with a bad history. Like, I think that's pretty good. And then, I mean, stop me if I say something that's off the chain, Anthony. I'm just saying. And then, if you think about, like, what was the best trade of the last decade, I think the Cavs might have made that too. When they traded Mo Williams to the Clippers for what was a salary dump, Baron Davis's contract got sent back to Cleveland. Baron played 1 year with the Cavs and he was amnestied. They got an unprotected draft pick for their troubles, and that unprotected draft pick hit number one, and that wound up being Kyrie Irving. So they basically, and Mo Williams actually ended up playing a couple of years for the Clippers and ended up getting traded or bought out or something, and he ended up back on the Cavs for the 2016 championship team. So basically, the Cavs traded nothing and got Kyrie Irving out of it, who was like a 5-time All-Star and hit one of the biggest shots in NBA history. I mean, like, those are two pretty damn good acquisitions by a front office that's been maligned for a really long time. Am I saying anything out of line yet?
The Cavaliers don't need it to win another draft.
But it's one thing to win it and just get lucky, but they actually made a move that was brilliant that netted that. That wasn't their pick that hit. That was the Clippers pick. So, I'm just saying, man, they get credit for that. They didn't luck into something in that instance. They actually made a savvy move that worked in their favor, but it was a savvy move nonetheless that it took a smart front office to accomplish. But be that as it may, as a Cavs fan, I'm sitting back and I'm really enjoying what I'm seeing what the Lakers are doing right now, because everybody just assumed that the Lakers front office was worthy of having LeBron James and that the Cleveland front office was not, and that's a complete farce. And I'm going to run this down really fast because we're short on time, but since Dr. Buss died and then the Lakers signed Kobe to that horrible deal like 10 months after that, there was infighting with Jeannie Buss and Jim Buss. They basically fought for the team, ultimately resulting in Jeannie Buss winning and firing her own brother. The Lakers were embarrassed when they went to that, when they tried to have a pitch meeting with LaMarcus Aldridge in 2015. They embarrassed themselves at that meeting. Then they tried to get a meeting with Durant in 2016. They couldn't even get on his freaking calendar. He just said, nah, I'm good. No meeting for y'all. They fired two head coaches. Then they hired Magic Johnson and an agent that looks like the guy from Parks and Recreation. You know what I'm saying?
Shout out to Rob Lowe.
Yeah, they got Rob Lowe and Magic to run the team. The guy with no experience in Magic Johnson, who LeVar Ball all of a sudden went on TV today and said is just a figurehead, which is may not totally be totally inaccurate. They got busted for tampering twice. Everybody likes to get on the Cavs for winning the lottery all these times. The Lakers drafted second 3 times, I believe, in the last 5 years. And all those picks have underachieved. And they actually traded away one of them, who was D'Angelo Russell, who was an all-star. He was the best one of the bunch. They traded him away to Brooklyn, and now he's in the all-star game. They also had a lottery pick that was Julius Randle. They got rid of him. They didn't re-sign him after he was a restricted free agent, and he left. But they held on to these other underachievers like Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball. Kuzma's okay, but, you know, D'Angelo and Julius Randle are better than any of their young players that they have right now. Then they actually drafted Lonzo Ball. They actually drafted, not that Lonzo's a terrible player, but he's LeVar Ball's kid. Like, why would you draft LeVar Ball's kid knowing everything that that was going to bring, and knowing that LeVar was just going to shoot his mouth off every chance he got, they brought him in. And now we see that because LeBron and them can't control LeVar anymore, we see LeVar going on national TV blasting Luke Walton. They bring in LeBron James. Hey, that's great. They didn't deserve him because the management had proven that they were just as inept as anybody else in the league. Like the Lakers front office has in the last since that Kobe contract, the Lakers front office has been way worse than the Cavs front office. But nobody wants to hear that. Everybody just assumes the Cavs are idiots and the Lakers are the Lakers. The Lakers have sucked for some time for a reason, okay? And their front office has been horrendous. They whiffed on Kawhi Leonard, trading for him. They whiffed on Paul George in free agency. They signed a bunch of misfits veterans that don't fit their team now, that don't fit around LeBron. Luke Walton is on the hottest of hot seats. He's got gasoline draws on, and he's coaching in hell right now. That's his situation. And he's been on the hot seat since December. Now LeBron's getting hurt. They couldn't land Anthony Davis, and everybody's saying that the Pelicans were basically clowning them today. Like, this is really bad, and this has the potential to fall apart for the Lakers in a really ugly way. And as a Cavaliers fan, I just have to say that I'm really enjoying it. I'm really enjoying it. And they'll probably get Anthony Davis at some point. But that's all. That's all I have to say. Do you have anything to add to that?
There's the gift and the curse of LeBron.
Yes.
You just talked about how they had maybe 6 or 7 top 10 picks in the last, as many years. You get those by being bad. You keep Kobe Bryant to get that legacy together, keep him in the same uniform, keep people in the seats. There's method to the madness, both in Cleveland and in L.A.
Yes.
It all added up to them getting the best player in the game now and a chance to get, Anthony Davis, or be in the conversation for keeping a big fish free agent this offseason. So there's method to the madness, but it's hard to build around LeBron, and you let LeBron just kind of do some things, and it's always going to go badly because LeBron can't build a team. That's what happened in Cleveland. That's what you're seeing in L.A. now. It's the same kind of story. It's probably going to work out because they're LeBron, and it's also L.A. So I would just wait and see what they end up doing. Maybe not this year, but definitely next year.
Yeah, I mean, they'll probably get another star player to pair with him eventually. And there's a decent chance it's going to be Anthony Davis eventually. But, this is what I've been telling people, how hard it is to have LeBron James on your team. And when I used to defend the Cavs front office over and over again, and they had to make all these hasty roster moves all the time. And it's like, you guys don't understand. LeBron put them on a clock. LeBron actually signed a long-term deal with the Lakers, and they're still in the middle of all this bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, think about that. Like, the Cavs never had the luxury of having a 3-year deal plus a 4th-year option. And they knew that LeBron was in the bag for a few years and that they could think down the road for their franchise. You know what I mean? But LeBron was constantly cutting off his nose to spite his face by never committing to the Cavs. I've said it a zillion times. And we're seeing it now in L.A., just how impatient he can be. He wants to win, and I'm not blaming him for that because his clock is ticking. He's not getting any younger. So he doesn't want to waste any more miles or, any more years. But come on, man. I mean, like, you put all these old players out there. Like, is it any coincidence that, like, a month into the season, Tyson Chandler ends up on the Lakers? And they get all these old guys. Magic Johnson starts off the season saying, like, well, we don't want to be like Cleveland. We don't want to end up like Cleveland. Like, y'all look exactly like Cleveland right now. Y'all look exactly like Cleveland right now. So, if you want to criticize the Cavs, I mean, like I said, I think the Cavs have made a lot of good moves. I haven't seen the Lakers make a lot of good moves yet, and there's still time for that. But you don't sit here and criticize the Cavs front office and then let the Lakers slide, because that ain't happening over here on this podcast. But, yeah, man, so that's about all, man. We're out of time. I know it went quick. Any final thoughts, Anthony?
No, I'm actually looking forward to Eastern Conference playoffs. I'm happy NFL season's over. We can focus on basketball. And, again, just go to what should be a good set of series of playoffs, especially the East now.
Word up, man. Appreciate you stopping through for a quick moment. Everybody check out hiphopsportsport.com for the latest. We got a piece coming up on Drake. He's been in the game for 10 years, if you can believe that. We're going to talk a little bit about that. This podcast is going up real soon. We had all of our playoff picks up there, and we just appreciate the support, man, as always. We out of here. Peace.